Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Barack Obama's former pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, went low profile after clips of his fiery sermons hit the news media in March. But if some Obama supporters hoped Reverend Wright might go away, they were mistaken. He's in the limelight now. He's his own man. And yesterday, he was talking very pointedly about criticism leveled at him.
This most recent attack on the black church, it is not an attack on Jeremiah Wright. It is an attack on the black church.
Republicans are already wrapping Wright into their ads. Hillary Clinton says she'd have had none of it. Barack Obama is in a tough spot. This hour, On Point, Reverend Jeremiah Wright in the spotlight. Joining me first today from Alexandria, Virginia, is Peter Nicholas, reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He was at the National Press Club yesterday in Washington, where Reverend Wright delivered his latest big speech. Peter Nicholas, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
So what was the impact of Reverend Wright on this interesting crowd? A lot of journalists, but a lot of black supporters of Reverend Wright as well.
Well, there were many supporters of Reverend Wright who were very pleased with what he was saying and very supportive, applauding him throughout. There were many reporters, mostly in the balcony, who were, I think, pretty incredulous about what was playing out that day. What we saw was Reverend Wright, who was defiant and not apologetic at all. I think many in the press corps had thought we would see a more tempered version of Reverend Wright than we'd seen in footage of past sermons. But in fact, he was not backing away from his most controversial statements. And I think the atmosphere in the press corps was one of surprise that what we were witnessing was actually a problem for Barack Obama that seemed to be mushrooming before our eyes.
We're going to listen to plenty of Reverend Wright today, and not just the short clips that he's complained about. But here's a question that came yesterday at the National Press Club in Washington about whether, to the minister, to Reverend Wright, about whether he is hurting Barack Obama's candidacy.
Senator Obama has tried to explain away some of your most contentious comments and has distanced himself from you. It's clear that many people in his campaign consider you a detriment. In that context, why are you speaking out now?
On November the 5th and on January 21st, I'll still be a pastor. As I said, this is not an attack on Jeremiah Wright. It has nothing to do with Senator Obama. It is an attack on the black church launched by people who know nothing about the African-American religious tradition. And why am I speaking out now? In our community, we have something called playing the dozens. If you think I'm going to let you talk about my mama and her religious tradition and my daddy and his religious tradition and my grandma, you got another thing coming.
Reverend Jeremiah Wright before the National Press Club in Washington yesterday. Peter Nicholas, by the look and sound of it, Reverend Wright was having a good time.
He certainly was. He was charming in some respects. He talked about his own plans to run as a candidate for vice president.
Jokingly.
That was tongue-in-cheek. He ruled out a bid for the presidency. He used the term capiche. Certainly he entertained his audience, and he's obviously a very articulate, intelligent man. I think the political issue before us is how does this play for Barack Obama? At a time when Obama had thought that he had put this issue to rest with his well-received speech in Philadelphia, Reverend Wright reemerges on the stage and shows that he's not interested in going away. He's not necessarily interested in Barack Obama's immediate political interests. He said he has a duty to speak out as a pastor, and what that suggests is that his interests might be at variance with that of Barack Obama. So the Obama campaign is now having to regroup and is in meetings and discussions about how to cope with this.
But there's all kinds of issues on the table here. Barack Obama's politics and political fate, just one of them. Reverend Wright saying yesterday there are bigger issues about acknowledging the many cultural strands of this country at the same time. But first, just to the political, Barack Obama has big contests right in front of him here, North Carolina, Indiana. Is it possible to tell from what we saw in Pennsylvania, from polling that's being done, how the whole Wright drama, which had subsided a bit, maybe now it's back, how it is playing out for Obama?
Well, we're going to find out in the coming weeks. There are pollsters who are looking at this issue. What we do know is that after Barack Obama gave his race speech in Philadelphia in mid-March, polling showed that the damage was minimal, that most people were willing to look past that and felt that Obama had handled it well. There was no real concrete evidence that there was a backlash against Obama that he was going to suffer from. But with Reverend Wright's reemergence, we have to reevaluate that. What we saw from the exit polls in Pennsylvania is that Obama has a problem with white voters, that about 20% of people who voted in the Pennsylvania primary cited race as a factor in making their decision. And of those white voters, 3-1 went for Hillary Clinton over Barack Obama. So the Obama campaign needs to find arguments that will resonate with white blue-collar voters who are struggling with the economy. The last thing that Obama wants to be talking about right now and wants the public talking about is Reverend Wright. It's just contrary to what his interests are. It's not the message that he wants to get out at this point.
Barack Obama is saying, he does not speak for me, he does not speak for the campaign. And yet, for 20 years, there he was in the congregation, and it's hard to get away from that. Reverend Wright seeing it as an opportunity of a different kind yesterday at the National Press Club. Let's listen. Here he speaks again about the attacks he's endured and the opportunity, he said, that those create.
The most recent attack on the black church. It is our hope that this just might mean that the reality of the African-American church will no longer be invisible. Maybe now, as an honest dialogue about race in this country begins, a dialogue called for by Senator Obama, and a dialogue to begin in the United Church of Christ among 5,700 congregations in just a few weeks, maybe now, as that dialogue begins, the religious tradition that has kept hope alive for people struggling to survive in countless hopeless situations, maybe that religious tradition will be understood, celebrated, and even embraced by a nation that seems not to have noticed why 11 o'clock on Sunday morning has been called the most segregated hour in America.
Reverend Jeremiah Wright, yesterday before the National Press Club. Peter Nicholas with the LA Times, please stand by for a moment. I want to introduce another voice here. With us from Riverside, California, is Jonathan Walton, professor of religious studies at the University of California, Riverside. He grew up in the black church, was raised in Atlanta, and is now both an ordained minister and a scholar of African-American religion. Jonathan Walton, Reverend Walton, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
How you doing, Tom?
We're good, and we're listening with great interest here. You can see both the intense curiosity and unease. I'm reading here Bob Herbert, a black columnist for the New York Times, saying this morning, he says in his column about Reverend Wright's comments, he says, forget the gibberish about responding to attacks on the black church. He says about Reverend Wright, he's living a narcissist's dream. His 15 minutes have arrived. Well, what do you say, Jonathan Walton? Reverend Wright says this is a good opportunity to talk about cultural differences. Bob Herbert says, forget about it. This is about him in the spotlight.
Well, Herbert is free to have his opinion. I think to put this even in a broader context, actually what Reverend Wright was doing yesterday morning at the National Press Conference was kicking off a conference, a Samuel DeWitt Proctor conference, actually, that focuses on the prophetic strand of black preaching. So therefore, that's the crowd that was assembled yesterday was largely comprised of members from the African-American religious faith community, scholars, as well as pastors who were there to have a two-day conference on the insights and contributions of the black church in America. And if we were to talk about this black church that Reverend Wright was saying that was under attack, really the point that I think he was trying to make was that the black church has always been in conflict with the American mainstream. Now, to be sure, this is not based on the message and the mores of the black church as much as it's based on the ideology and cultural ethos of the dominant society. So unfortunately, the worldview of white supremacy is what has necessitated the birth of the independent black church movement in the first place. So whether, as Reverend Wright did, whether he was referencing the invisible institution, which was comprised of enslaved blacks who would steal away in private to worship God apart from their enslavers, because the invisible church and the members therein understood that the Jesus that they were praying to was not the same Jesus that the master was praying to. Or whether you're talking about free blacks in the North in the late 18th century, like Absalom Jones and Richard Allen, who had to endure the ecclesiastical segregation practices of congregations, and thus that is what animated the development of the African Methodist Episcopal denomination.
But Barack Obama is running for president necessarily in a democracy by appealing to the mainstream. That's the only way you win a majority. So are these, is this a kind of insoluble conflict or problem here between these two and their missions at the moment?
Well, I think that is part of the conflict at hand, right? Because really Jeremiah Wright sees himself and views himself and presents himself as a truth teller. And you may even recall the comments that he made yesterday that he says that he told Barack Obama in private, he says, is the day that you are elected, when you are elected president, then I am coming after you. So thus he is trying to mold himself and position himself as, I am not a politician, I am a prophet.
Speaking truth to power, even if the power is Barack Obama. I'm sorry there, Jonathan, but I've got to turn to Peter Nicholas just for a moment. Mm-hmm. Peter Nicholas, how big a problem for the Obama campaign? How acutely aware are they? We just got half a minute before the break here.
Well, they're certainly aware of it. David Axelrod, who is chief strategist to Barack Obama, said that candidly acknowledged that this is not ideal for Reverend Wright to reemerge at this moment, and that they have no control over Reverend Wright or what he's going to say. And they seem to be well aware that this is a political problem. They want to be talking about the economy. They want to be appealing to white voters. It's not going to happen as long as the press and public are focused on Reverend Wright's more controversial statements.
Peter Nicholas with the LA Times, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Bob Herbert in the New York Times writing today, the question that cries out for an answer from Mr. Wright is why, if he's so passionately committed to liberating and empowering blacks, does he seem so insistent on wrecking the campaign of the only African-American ever to have a legitimate shot at the presidency? Jonathan Walton in California, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama's pastor for 20 years, still talking. We're looking at what he's saying, its implications, where it comes from, and what it may mean for the Obama candidacy and for our cultural conversation. Let's listen back for just a moment to Barack Obama in his big speech in Philadelphia on race last month, saying he cannot fully reject Jeremiah Wright.
I can no more disown him than I can disown the black community. I can no more disown him than I can disown my white grandmother, a woman who helped raise me, a woman who sacrificed again and again for me, a woman who loves me as much as she loves anything in this world, but a woman who once confessed her fear of black men who passed her by on the street, and who on more than one occasion has uttered racial or ethnic stereotypes that made me cringe. These people are part of me. And they are part of America, this country that I love.
Clearly, these people indeed are part of Barack Obama's background and very clearly part of this country for a long, long time, just about as far back as you want to go, white or black, their grandmother or black church. It's all part of what we are. Yesterday at the National Press Club, Reverend Wright was asked about Senator Obama's chances in this presidential election.
Do you think it is God's will that Senator Obama be president?
I said I would offer myself for candidacy for vice president. I have not offered myself for candidacy of God. I can't presume to know what God would want. In my tradition, however, everybody has been saying to me as it pertains to the candidacy is what God has for you is for you. If God intends for Mr. Obama to be the president, then no white racist, no political pundit, no speech, nothing can get in the way, because God will do what God wants to do.
Reverend Jeremiah Wright before the National Press Club yesterday. We've been joined from the University of California, Riverside, by Professor of Religious Studies, Jonathan Walton. He's author of the forthcoming book, Watch This, Televangelism in Black Popular Culture. With us right now as well from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, is Bill Leonard, Dean of the Divinity School at Wake Forest University, Professor of Church History, author of Baptists in America. Bill Leonard, welcome back to On Point. Good to have you.
Hello, Tom.
I think, so I understand you're white, but you attend a black church. Have I got that right, Bill?
I do. 11 years as a member of the oldest African-American Baptist church here in Winston-Salem.
So we've got two then, between you and Jonathan Walton, with a lot of perspective here. What do you make of Reverend Wright's claim in the past couple of days that criticism of him is criticism of the black church, of black culture, in a sense?
I think I'd rather start by saying that all of this illustrates what we should have known after 20 years or more of discussing religion in the public square at political election time, that American religion is very messy, and it doesn't fit all the categories, and it's very layered. There are many ways to look at it, and we all read it in different ways with different glasses. Number one, Reverend Wright is standing and speaking out of what I would call the Jeremiad tradition of preaching in the United States that dates back to the Puritans, that black and white ministers have used since the 1600s in this country, in which there was a kind of ideal that was held up prophetically in the tradition of Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Amos, that dealt with woe and promise and moral failure, not only in the church, but in the nation. And so to suggest that that's just a recent issue or that it pops up here and there in very weird people is not at all correct. It's a long tradition. Many of us who grew up in Baptist churches in the South went almost every Sunday, and at some point preachers would refer to the things they despised about the culture corruption and the political corruption in the country across the theological spectrum. So I think we start there.
Jonathan Walton, I have to say, Minister Wright's sermons and the sort of prophetic, very tough sermons that got so much attention in the clips in March, while they were put very colorfully, the substance of them, I'd have to say personally, was very familiar to me from my own, I wasn't raised a Baptist, but from my own church upbringing, that portion of a Sunday morning of a sermon when the pastor would look at the failings of the worldly life and be very, very tough on them, whether it was our personal worldly lives or our local community or even the nation. But it was very colorfully put. Is it a matter of delivery that distinguishes it from, I don't know, the same prophetic tradition in any church, white or black, around the country?
I'm not sure about that. I'm not quite sure that it's a matter of delivery. Again, I think that part of the problem is just kind of the media world that we live in and the mass-mediated world that we live in and the way that Jeremiah Wright's sermons were projected upon the TV screen. For those who have seen the larger sermons, in its context, we see that not only were the sermon snippets that were shown, not only were they taken out of context, but they were also slivered and sliced into sound bites, and that's to say that they were somewhat cut and pasted. And so thus it made it appear as if he was condemning America on his own merit, if you will, rather than speaking it as Professor Leonard so articulately put, in a kind of larger Jeremiadic tradition where the critique is also grounded in a love and it's also grounded in a hope for what the society can be.
Yeah, it's hard to make it fit into sound bites, that's for sure. And even when you get the bigger clip, you may not get that whole envelope of love and hope. Let's do the best we can here for a moment, if I may, because I want to hear both of you on this prophetic tradition, pull it out a little more. Let's go back to the sermon that has got so much attention, and bits of which are now being wrapped into GOP political ads, in which Jeremiah Wright says, "God damn America." I want to listen to a big chunk of it here, and this is a portion of a sermon from April of 2003, and Reverend Wright begins this portion by saying, governments lie. God does not lie. Governments change. God does not change. And he related it back to a biblical passage about the failures of Rome and then took it forward to other worldly failures. Let's listen.
But the British government failed. The Russian government failed. The Japanese government failed. The German government failed. And the United States of America government, when it came to treating her citizens of Indian descent fairly, she failed. She put them on reservations. When it came to treating her citizens of Japanese descent fairly, she failed. She put them in internment prison camps. When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
April 2003, Jonathan Walton, there it is, straight up from the prophetic tradition. Hard to hear, as a prophetic tradition often is, but give us the context. We've run as much as most Americans are ever likely to hear of that sermon there. What do we need to know about this?
Well, again, I think what he was saying, even when he was saying the goddamn America, mm-hmm. he was after giving the context about how whenever we place a government or we place a government or a system of law, when we place that on the throne beside God, I think the point that's what he is trying to make, then that's our folly. That is to the nation's folly. And then when he goes into to the refrain of God damn America, it's God damn America for killing its innocent people, God damn America for treating her citizens for less than being human. And then I believe that refrain even ends for saying God damn America for thinking itself to be God Almighty.
As long as she keeps trying to act like she is God and she is supreme.
As long as she keeps trying to act as if she is God. Mm-hmm. And so really, again, what the prophet sees his or herself as doing is trying to point out the failings or the underside of a society where, again, where he contrasts himself against more of the rhetoric of a politician, I guess you will, is to see, instead of trying to look at this as the glass is half full and all is well in the world, the role of the prophet is to say that all is not well, that there is another side of this story, and if we are really going to love our country and if we are really going to be patriotic, then we have to be willing to commit what some have called patriotic treason, and that is to say love our nation enough where we will be patriotic enough to call her into question where she has fallen short.
Bill Leonard, the United States is famously a deeply, widely religious society compared to other Western countries anyway these days, and at the same time a country very focused on national greatness. And here when this conversation comes into the public square and the religious context gets stripped away, it becomes very hard to swallow.
Well, it does, and the litany you just ran really is a historically verifiable list of national sins that run from the Trail of Tears to Middle Passage to Jim Crow that we all have to own. It's the underbelly of our identity, but here's where pluralism adds another dimension and brings us to the point we're already in, and that is from left wing to right, from African-American to Anglo to Latino preaching, one of the things that happens is things we say rhetorically in a religious context where the boundaries are set and the congregation understands call and response and understands the kind of preaching that grows out of a particular tradition, whatever that tradition is, once that gets into the public square, what sounds like conviction in one tradition can become bigotry in the larger media-based context. And that's what happens, whether that's Jerry Falwell or John Hagee or Jeremiah Wright or any number of persons who climb into pulpits every Sunday and address in their community of faith things that have context and boundary. But once in the public square, we're trying to explain how this can be said and how this can be happening because no longer is Reverend Wright able to articulate his own meaning himself and have it stay at that. It's gone from him now. Everybody's weighing in on this.
Though Reverend Wright insisting on his right and the importance in the last few days and before of articulating it, indeed, right out of his tradition.
Sure.
Let's get a call from Greenville, South Carolina. We've got Gerald on the line. Hi, Gerald. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Very well.
Well, you know, I've been listening to Jeremiah Wright's comments, and the one thing that I do understand is, you know, what he's saying, but the purpose that he's saying is the problem. What he says is the black church. There is no black church. There is no white church. The church is God's church. And the fact is that when Jesus Christ came to this earth, the thing that he was trying to do is, as the Lord's Prayer states, bring heaven down to earth. So his message was not anything about politics, anything about race. It was about forgiveness. And so if you are a scholar or a study or a theologian, the first thing that you've got to understand is you've got to take on those practices, what Jesus Christ did, which is forgive. I don't care what they did. If you know that Jesus Christ came to this, you know, earth and he did what he did, he died for our sins, the thing that you also got to understand is that God is a righteous judge, and nothing happens on this earth without going across his death first. So knowing that you know you don't have to defend yourself, you don't have to defend the black church, because there is no black church. You got to know that he allowed it to happen and that he still wants you to forgive.
Gerald, let us pick up exactly that point, and I appreciate your call. This got touched on Friday when Bill Moyers on PBS sat down with Jeremiah Wright, and he asked about race and Wright's Chicago church. Let's listen.
So when Trinity Church says it is unashamedly black and unapologetically Christian, is it embracing a race-based theology?
No, it is not. It is embracing Christianity without giving up Africanity. A lot of our missionaries were going to other countries assuming that our culture is superior, that you have no culture. And to be a Christian, you must be like us. Right now, you can go to Ghana, Nigeria, Senegal to see Christians in 140-degree weather. They have to have on a tie because that's what it means to be a Christian. Well, it's that kind of assuming that our culture, we have the only sacred music. You must sing our music. You must use a pipe organ. You cannot use your instruments. It's that kind of assumption that in the field of missions, people say, you know what? We're doing this wrong. We need to take Christ and leave culture at home. We need to learn the cultures of the people into which we're moving and preach the message of Jesus Christ using the culture that we are a part of.
Jeremiah Wright with Bill Moyers on PBS at the end of last week. Jonathan Walton, how about it? Our caller, Gerald, says there is no black church, there is no white church. Reverend Wright says his church, which I guess its kind of slogan is that it's unashamedly black and unapologetically Christian. He says it's embracing Christianity without giving up Africanity. So black church, white church, different, the same? How do you interpret it, Jonathan?
Well, I think that on a cultural and social level, there are differences. I think that we are contextual beings, and that we live in a cultural context, and we have to be very aware of that, even as we seek to reach across the barriers of race and class and gender and all of these other social constructions that we do construct. So therefore, I agree with the caller in that regard. But I also have to say, though, that we have to be very mindful of the varying culture and context in which we operate. And that's what Jeremiah Wright was talking about when he was talking about being unashamedly black and unapologetically Christian. Because what his congregation is seeking to hold in tension are these levels that seek to pull African-American Christians in varying ways. In other words, to be Christian for a long time was meant to be European, was meant to be a part of what status quo saw as being Christian. And that was the varying mores and realities therein. At the same time, there you had the Black Power movement that came along, and then you had critiques coming from black nationalists who were saying that you could not be a Christian because the Christian was the white man's religion, and if you're going to call yourself black and committed to the African-American community and the liberation therein, that you can't pray before a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus.
Jonathan Walton, please stand by. Bill Leonard in North Carolina, we've got to take a short break. Talking about Jeremiah Wright, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama's pastor for 20-some years, married Obama, baptized his daughters. Reverend Wright was quiet after the huge furor over snippets of his sermons in March, but he's talking in the last few days. He's talking a lot, and many people listening, eager to hear from you. What do you think? How does Jeremiah Wright sound to you? Inspired? Insulting? Courageous? Vain? On fire with the spirit? Over the top? And is Barack Obama's candidacy big enough to take Jeremiah Wright in stride, or is his former pastor going to take him down? With us from Riverside, California, University of California there, Jonathan Walton. He's professor of religious studies there, raised in the black church in Atlanta, now an ordained minister himself. And with us from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Bill Leonard, dean of the Divinity School at Wake Forest University, professor of church history there. We've got a lot of callers on the line. Let's begin to turn to, let's go to Adam in Boston. Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I want to start off by saying I'm a very big Barack Obama supporter. I like many people, have felt my heart swell, not just at the idea of somebody who looks like him as president, but at his ideas, and have great hopes for his candidacy. I also want to say that like many people of my demographic, I think I resonate somewhat with his grandmother's expression of fear. In this case, not necessarily fear from somebody walking down the street, but the fear that we felt at some of the prominent African-American leaders, historically political leaders, but also somebody like Jeremiah Wright. And I think that the important thing here isn't religion. I think you can quibble about or argue or discuss different flavors of Christianity and different flavors of the Judeo-Christian or even the Muslim tradition. I think the important issue here is it really does come down to the issue of race and the ability for most Americans to feel, to push back that little voice of fear in our head when we look at a Barack or we hear a Barack, and then we see behind them Jeremiah Wright, and we ask ourselves the question of whether the anger or the disaffection, the otherness, which is so prominent in a Jeremiah Wright, doesn't somehow chronically or fatally infect a Barack Obama and his position.
But doesn't, in a way, Adam, does the country have to take that in stride? I mean, the points of history that we heard Jeremiah Wright ticking off there, they're not high points, they were low points, because it was the prophetic critique. But those are real history.
And he's accurate about that, and no one should deny that. But the challenge of leadership is not to take the low road or to nurse the wounds. And as a Jew, I know this, because, and my people need to rise above the Holocaust, or the people that I come from, in order to take a place on the world stage. As an African-American leader, you know, Jeremiah Wright, in my opinion, has deeply failed his own people and people like me who share the ideals of a colorblind society by using his opportunity in the limelight to stoke this old rage.
Adam,
the question for the country is right now, and for Barack Obama, is going to be knowing that reality, knowing that fear that so many people who want to love him and support him also have to contend with. What choice does he make going forward? And this is going to be, I believe, the most critical moment of his candidacy. I don't care about Jeremiah Wright. I think he has his place. What I care about is what are the demands of leadership, and how does Barack Obama rise to them?
And how the fears that this can raise come into that challenge. Those are big, important points, and we will come to them. I thank you for raising them. Let me get one more call before we do, if I may, from New Haven, Connecticut. Robert, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I think that comment was very insightful. And I think that Obama's candidacy is really presenting an existential dilemma for Reverend Wright and for many other blacks of his generation, which is something that Obama himself suggested in his speech on March 18th. I'm reminded by the Confederate General Howell Cobb, who said when the Confederacy was faced with defeat if they didn't arm their own slaves, he said that if slaves will make good soldiers, then our whole theory of slavery is wrong. I think that for Reverend Wright, if a black man can become president of the United States, then his whole theory of America is wrong. So that seems to me to be what's at stake here.
Robert, again, a great point. Jonathan Walton, you've heard both, and they really do, each in their own way, go in part to what Barack Obama said in Philadelphia. He said he couldn't renounce or denounce Reverend Wright, but that Reverend Wright had failed to keep up with the times, keep up with progress that had been made. In effect, progress embodied in his candidacy. Robert says, you know, Barack Obama's success, if it should come, represents an existential threat to Reverend Wright's view of the world. What do you say, Reverend Walton?
Yeah, I think both of the callers pointed out something wonderful, and that is not only the beautiful diversity of America, but also the diversity of the African-American community. And thus we see it embodied in this conflict going on here. Now, when persons talk about, though, Jeremiah Wright being representative of the past, I wish I could say that was true. I wish I could agree with them in the totality of their statement. But the reason that I can't is because simply I think what Jeremiah Wright is trying to keep track of is the fact that African-American suffering and suffering in general in American society is not simply a relic of the past.
But would it not undercut his kind of fundamental gist, his posture, if the leader of the country in the White House were African-American?
Well, possibly, but maybe not. I mean, again, I don't think this is about racial affiliation as much as it is about moral affiliation. And I think that, this kind of racial allegiance that we sometimes speak of, I think that this is actually where Jeremiah Wright seems to be cutting against the grain. Remember, he made the comment yesterday that he said that he would hold Barack Obama just as accountable and come after him as he would anyone elected to the high office of the presidency of the United States.
And Bill Leonard, what about our caller Adam's point that what he sees this all pointing up is the racial fear that still lies in the American conversation?
Oh, I think that's very insightful. I would say it a little differently, and it's this. I really think, and the callers have helped me with this today, I really think this may just be about us as a nation and our ability in almost every political campaign that I've known about in voting for president, for us to distract ourselves by issues that may be important on a variety of levels, but keep us from dealing with the huge issues that are upon us. People are out of jobs. The gas prices are high. We're in a war where we're moving now toward 5,000 young people killed. And we don't want to talk about that. We'd rather talk about one African-American preacher who scares us or makes us mad or overspeaks or is caught up in his own rhetoric or speaking out of a tradition that is certainly in transition. Whatever you say about the difference between Jeremiah Wright and Barack Obama, it is a tradition that is in transition. But we're choosing through our media and through these kinds of conversations to distract ourselves from the deep moral, political, economic issues that are just undermining our society in a variety of ways.
Bill Leonard,
I
hear you on
Jeremiah's
that.
Jeremiah's right.
Yeah,
right.
I hear you, and yet Barack Obama's candidacy has represented in part a hope or an ideal of moving beyond racial division, which has seemed something quite important and relevant in this country for a long time, not a distraction.
Well, but look what we're talking about. We're not talking about those other issues. And we're saying he hasn't distanced himself from his pastor, and if he did, then this would be okay. Part of what we enter into then is, so what if he doesn't? All of us choose churches and pastors for a whole variety of reasons, and if as Lyndon Johnson used to say about Texans, if his church knows when he's sick and cares when he dies, that may be the thing that keeps him there because it's doing something for him and his family that they need done in that realm. And they may let their pastor get away with things that they otherwise disagree with. And knowing when to stay in a church and when to leave it is another one of these larger cultural and religious questions that all of us who participate in religious communities have to deal with.
Yep. Well, on another day and many other hours, we will hit many other of those important topics you point to, but right now we've got Jeremiah right in front of us in the last few days, and it is fascinating. Let's go to Orangeburg, South Carolina, and Eric. Hi, Eric. You're on the air. Hello, Eric. Are you there, my friend?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, you're on the air, Eric.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm okay. What do you hear?
Well, I wanted to say that I happen to be an African American who lives in South Carolina. this year, I consider myself to be an independent, but I'll be voting Democratic this year. I attend a multicultural church by choice and by purpose. I would not be a part of a church that was all black or all white, just because I feel that that's not what the master would have said. My pastor happens to be a Republican, unapologetically, and that's certainly within it. We have talked about it. We're actually the best of friends. My pastor also happens to be a white person. The fact that he's going to vote Republican and I'm going to vote Democratic doesn't have anything to do with me following him as a spiritual leader.
So what do you make of Jeremiah Wright and the big conversation around him? Should we just set it aside, say it's a distraction, never mind, or is it worth our attention?
I believe that Reverend Wright is obviously entitled to his opinion. He has a way of doing things, and the truth of the matter is, unfortunately, people like Reverend Wright serve a purpose in the United States. His way is certainly different than my way. Rather than raise the distinctions and dwell on the negatives, I choose to do the opposite. And I hope and I feel like my way does some good. I'm sure his way does some good. I don't believe that dwelling on it as a part of Senator Obama's campaign does anyone any good. I'd much rather be talking about how we're going to solve the problems in this country.
You and Bill Leonard both. Eric, thank you very much for your call. And again, it's wonderful to see all the stripes of perspective here. Really glad to have it. Let's get another from Newport, Rhode Island. Emily, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I'm shocked how much play that this whole story has gotten, particularly the soundbite, the Goddamn America soundbite, and I want to thank you for playing a longer clip of that sermon.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm shocked is that we've had politically motivated ministers, Jerry Falwell and Pat Buchanan and others, courted for decades by the conservative right, who have said not only Goddamn America, but that God visits horrible tragedies upon this country whenever we exhibit tolerance toward things they disagree with. So I wonder what you and your guests think about the about my opinion, which is that racism is really the only factor that's bringing this to the forefront.
So you mean when Jerry Falwell, after 9/11, said this is a result of American debauchery and tolerance of homosexuality and all the rest? I don't know if he explicitly said Goddamn America, but you heard it that way.
I certainly did, and the same thing after Hurricane Katrina, when one of them, I forget which one, said that it was because of the immorality of New Orleans that thousands of Americans were killed. And that God did that. I think that's a much more terrible thing to say than God damns America for things that we did on purpose, like slavery and exterminating Native Americans. Mm.
Emily, thank you for your call. Jonathan Walton, how about it? Are these fair comparisons, or are you saying Jeremiah Wright's prophetic critique, his Jeremiad, is justified and the others are something else?
Well, I think the caller makes a really good point here, and I think what she actually points to and illumines is the fact that oftentimes persons from the religious right, whether we're talking about the late Jerry Falwell, whether we're talking about Pat Robertson, they do blame the failings on society, but they tend to blame it on persons who are easily otherized. That is to say, they're able to point to the gay and lesbian community. They are able to point to Muslims. They are able to point to Jews in their anti-Semitic rants, for example. And they are able to point in such a way to say, this is the reason that America is going to hell. And so thus, they take their critique and they point it downward at persons who tend to be always and already marginalized according to the American mainstream. Now, I think this is very different than what you see in the prophetic strand, because what the prophetic tradition does, when we talk about prophetic, we're really talking about speaking truth to power. Mm. And so, therefore, the prophetic tradition, rather than pointing down at persons who are already otherized, what the prophetic tradition does is point up toward power structures, the failings of the federal government, the failings of the military-industrial complex, for example. And so, thus, I think the caller's point is well taken in showing the difference here and the distinction. And I think part of the problem is that you have somebody like a Jeremiah Wright who is pointing up toward the power structure. And so while America sometimes feels comfortable otherizing those who are on the outside, America, often we are not as quite as comfortable as in indicting ourselves, ourselves being that which we consider mainstream, mainline.
Mm. Let's get one more call, if I may, from Paul in Boston. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi. My first quick comment is, and it speaks to the point that was just made, had any of those other ministers been on, the reporter you had at the beginning wouldn't have referred to them as articulate. I'd like to just begin with a quick quote by James Baldwin. He said he's talking to his 9-year-old nephew, whites, people who look like me, are in effect still trapped in history which they do not understand, and until they understand it, cannot be released from it. This is the 40th anniversary of the Kerner Commission report, as you may know, a report that my organization in Boston, Community Change, was founded on, because the Kerner Commission report said for a number of years we've been talking about a black problem in this country, but what we really have is a white problem. And
how do you get a black president if the whole problem is articulated as Jeremiah Wright does?
Well, again, I need to speak. The other hat I wear is I teach a class on the history and development of racism at the college level, and I have my students for 14 weeks, and by the end of the 14-week period,
we've got half a minute, Paul. Take us to it.
They understand that this history is a reality that mm-hmm. Wright is speaking about. So I think that, you know, there's been this talk of fear. There's been some people who talked about this, the ideal of colorblindness. We're nowhere near that ideal in this country, and people, particularly white people, have no clue about that, and so it's not surprising that this kind of conversation is mm-hmm. is happening. Mm-hmm.
Paul, thank you very much for that. Bill Leonard, what's your hope as you look at the balance of this campaign season, our political culture, our whole culture, through the prism of this conversation, Jeremiah Wright and his one-time congregate, Barack Obama, what's your hope about how the country takes this on, digest it?
Well, I think it's a great moment for democracy, and we need to be talking about these kinds of issues in terms of the transitions and the things that Obama represents. I also think that this is a good time for us to step back and say, what is important to us in this campaign? And these are significant issues, but they may not be the overarching ones. And let's try to focus on, let's let Jeremiah Wright go back to preaching as he's been doing, but let's look at the larger issues that we've all got to deal with, whoever the president may be.
We can say amen to that. Bill Leonard at Wake Forest, Jonathan Walton, UC California, thanks for being with us. This is On Point.